Welcome to the Painting Lines Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things tennis. Join Eric and Aiden in their discussion for updates on news and pop culture, and from hot takes to betting, they've got you covered.
Ready?
Welcome back to Painting Lines. It is officially clay court season. We had Houston, Estoril, and Morocco wrap up on Sunday, and Monte Carlo kicking off this week. Three different tournaments on three different continents. So we didn't see many heavyweight matchups. So instead of breaking down the tournaments, I'm going to run you through some key takeaways, and then we're going to take a step back and do a high-level analysis of the tour that Aiden will get into. So let me give it to you SparkNotes style. So Houston, we had the first African-American ATP final showdown. Pretty interesting. Shelton won it, and he moves to a new career high of 14. Like father, like son, his dad won it back in 1992. And Berrettini won the Grand Prix 2 in Morocco. First title since 2022.
Yeah, and a little bit more on that later, because it was actually my what's new of the week.
Nice. Yeah, good to see Berrettini back. 100%. And then Hurkacz winning in Estoril. He grabbed his first ever title on clay, which, you know, you don't really think of Hurkacz as a clay player, so could see some things in the future. And without any further ado, I will pass it to Aiden, where he's going to break down what we'll be discussing today.
One thing on Hurkacz there, I mean, you definitely don't expect to see big servers winning on clay, because it's known for it being kind of a more grindy surface that favors longer points, not shorter ones. But I guess Hurkacz kind of has it figured out there.
Yeah.
But so this week we kind of wanted to give a brief look into just the recent past of the ATP Tour going back to 2022. And we're going to break down the top 25 guys from then versus now, just to kind of see who's on the rise, who's kind of falling back, and just have an idea of the current state of tennis. So there are three main categories that I kind of wanted to talk about for guys that are in the top 25 or were in the top 25. There are guys that are at a new high that have kind of risen into the top 25 over the last 2 years, or actually only about a year and 3 months. There are a lot of guys that have fallen behind, and there are also guys that have kind of maintained their level, and you kind of know who those guys are, but I'll break it down anyway. So just starting off with some guys that have risen to kind of a new level since 2022, I think the obvious one, first off, Sinner, went from number 15 to number 2 in the world right now. And honestly, he's probably the best player in the world right now. It really seems like he's delivered on his potential that he showed at that point in his career, and I think this may be the most impressive jump in my eyes for him to go from a guy outside the top 10 to, in a little over a year, being the best player in the world, maybe. So what do you think about this one, Eric?
I agree with you. I think it's definitely the most impressive one, because back in 2022, I felt like I always looked at Sinner like, wow, this kid's he's good. But I didn't expect him to make that big of a jump this quickly. And you kind of think of it, he went from some scrawny kid who, you know, had blunt force power behind the ball and could bludgeon it, but he wasn't as consistent, he wasn't as crafty, to someone who you saw it most recently just being an absolute machine, like imposing his will on players. So I never really saw that in him before. It's kind of crazy to see his development there. And he's only 22 as well, so that's kind of the scary part. He's still got a whole, you know, at least a decade left in him.
100%. And I think you said it perfectly there, imposing his will on players. Like, he had complete control of those matches in Miami, and he kind of made his opponents look terrible.
Yeah, older players too.
Yeah, 100%. You know? Speaking of one of the guys he played, Dimitrov in 2022 was number 28 and has now risen to number 9. Late career resurgence for him, particularly in late 2023 through this year. He's kind of had the biggest jump, because he went from probably around 15 to now in the top 10 again. And honestly, a really impressive jump for him, just given the fact that he seemed to definitely be kind of sliding down that back half of his career.
Yeah, this one's definitely the most surprising for me, because I'm not going to lie, and I hate to say this, but I did kind of write him off, you know, back in 2022, just thinking, oh, he's kind of a mid-range player.
Yeah, I seem to remember you saying something about Vavrinka would smoke Dimitrov.
I know. I ate my words a couple weeks ago. I did admit it, and I will admit when I'm wrong, and I was completely wrong on this one. So just surprised. That's all I can say. I don't know what happened. I don't know what it was, but it's funny because, I mean, like, for the future of the sport, though, so Dimitrov, what, he has, you know, a few good years left. I think the resurgence of Dimitrov is great for tennis because you get to see one of these great players, like, at the back end of their career doing so well, where it's not like a total just kind of mudslide.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, we're just going to sweep away all the players mm-hmm. with this new era. Like, there are still guys that are already in the sport that can find success. And yeah, I completely agree. I think it's a positive. And hopefully Dimitrov finds even more success. I'd like to see him win maybe a Masters 1000. I think that'd be great. I was really rooting for him in this one. But, I mean, maybe he gets lucky. Maybe he wins a Grand Slam if he gets a real lucky draw.
Oh, yeah. No, if somehow Sinner doesn't make it there.
Exactly. Exactly. But moving on to the next guy that has kind of jumped up. He was in the top 25 back in 2022. He's Deminar. He was number 24. Now he's up to number 11 and is actually in the top five, I think, for this year's year-to-date rankings. But he's currently number 11. And I think really what we can say about Deminar is that he developed from a guy that was really an upset threat in tournaments where you saw him in the draw and you were like, he could beat anybody in this draw if he plays really well and they don't have their best game. Now he's kind of become a more consistent deep run player at the bigger tournaments where you expect him to get through at least three or four rounds and play in these bigger matchups later on.
Yeah, with Deminar, I feel like this was kind of something I could see coming. You know, like he was always, like you said, a player that had great potential, you know, amazing skill and talent. So I feel like this was just, you know, part of the natural progression.
And I also think not just his skill and talent, but also like his determination on the court. If you see someone with a ton of potential, but they're not giving it their all on the court, you don't really expect as much from them.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because I feel like in any aspect of life, you know, as long as you put in maximum effort and just chip away little wins, like make them play another ball. That's kind of Deminar's mindset. And if he just keeps at it, like he will progress. But then on the other side of that, that will only get you so far.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you need like a massive level of talent to do what mm-hmm. Deminar does. But yeah, like you said, it's the determination that kind of pulls him past people that have more talent than him because of how much effort he puts in when he plays.
Yeah, definitely.
Then Tommy Paul went up from number 32 to now number 15. Made a pretty big jump and closed the gap on becoming the top American. I'd say Fritz is still clear for now, but the issue for Tommy Paul, obviously, is that now he's facing an injury, so that's going to kind of derail his rise here. We're going to see what happens when he comes back from his injury, whether he's able to play at the same level, but he definitely made a jump up from 2022 to now.
Yeah, I know. I feel like this is kind of a similar play as Deminar. Like he was always someone that had potential and you can kind of compare the two. Like they play very similarly, you know, maximum effort. And like you said, it's kind of contentious with the top American right now. It could kind of go either way, I feel like, but with the injury obviously sets him back. Hopefully he doesn't miss clay court season because he actually won the junior Roland Garros.
Yeah. So clearly shows that he's solid on clay. I think it complements his style pretty well of the American players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then moving on to another guy who's been playing great in 2024 is Humbert, has two titles in 2024 already. But to be honest, I think he's a player that kind of flies a little bit under the radar. Like he's in the top 15 right now, but you don't really hear anything about him as a player. You'll see him in a tournament and you'll be like, oh, Humbert's doing well. That's a little surprising. And then you realize, no, it's not that surprising. He is that level of player.
You could not have said it any better. I feel like he just completely flies under the radar, at least like my radar. You know, I didn't really think of him as that guy, like a number 14 caliber player until his most recent title in Dubai when he was playing Bublik, because I saw the lines and I was like, oh, Bublik? Positive odds, like that's a steal. Come on, he's the better player. And he clearly was not. Humbert kind of gave it to him. And that's when I fully started to respect Humbert. I'm like, okay, this guy's the real deal. And his body type kind of reminds me of Sinner, or like the same kind of lanky, long, tons of power behind the shot. Do you see that comparison, or is that just me?
I think with the body type, yeah, but I think that's kind of a classic tennis player type of body. I think it's much less common that you see kind of the Sheltons or the Tiafos or someone like Joe Wilfred Tsonga out there, or Wawrinka, like wider guys.
Yeah.
I do agree that, I mean, you could make the comparison there, but I think it's a little bit of a, like I don't think it's a reach. I just think it's more of a common kind of body type.
Just the whip on the ball that they have. Like, they're, for how skinny they are, their ability to generate power. That's what I was trying to get at. But Humbert, he's actually got a very interesting story with his girlfriend. So his girlfriend, she also played pro, and she was his temporary coach for a bit, which I thought was pretty cool. And like coached him during his Marseille final. I don't know. I don't think I'm saying that right.
Marseille?
Marseille? Okay. That's close.
Yeah.
So Marseille.
Marseille?
Yeah. Marseille. No,
I think.
I'm not even going to try with the French accent.
Yeah. Another guy, like I've already mentioned, Shelton, was actually 96 in 2022, which I was actually a little surprised by. I didn't know he was ranked that high back in 2022 at the end of the year there. But I guess it does make sense. I mean, he had turned pro. And this was actually right before he made that massive run in the Australian Open last year. But all of last year, until that US Open happened, I was pretty down on Shelton. I mean, he had a great run at the Australian Open and then was losing first or second round consistently throughout almost the entire year. Came into the US Open and all of a sudden makes that incredible run to the semifinal. That gave him so much confidence, I think, and he just carried that through to now. He went on to the hard court tournaments after that, won in Tokyo, and now has been playing very well this year too. Just won this week, like we said earlier, and moved to a career high ranking.
It's funny you said that. It doesn't seem like he's been pro for that long, because it feels like just yesterday I was at the, you know, court 17 at the 2022 US Open, watching him as, I think he had just won the NCAAs. So yeah, his career progression has been great. It's always nice to almost discover a player like so young and so unknown at the time and like kind of follow their career. For example, Tommy Paul with me, you know, he was someone that I discovered him, I don't know, 2021, and just kind of always been rooting for him. And to just see these guys get better and better each year is so nice to see. Because, you know, I used to be a Tsitsipas fan.
Yeah. But anyway, that's kind of the last guy of note that I really wanted to talk about. There have been a couple other guys, but these are kind of the ones I wanted to focus on. And just moving on to the guys that have kind of fallen behind, there's really one that stands out to me, and it's FAA. At the end of 2022, he was ranked number 6 in the world. And he peaked like at a perfect time, to be honest, because he made the year-end finals, won 3 back-to-back tournaments at the end of the year. But nobody has really seemed to have had a harsher regression to the mean than he has. Dropping from number 6 in so quickly to being outside of the top 30, it just doesn't look that great. I mean, you look at his year last year, and it was terrible. I mean, he did not look like a top player at all. I mean, he really represented where he is right now, which is a guy that maybe wins one match in a bigger tournament. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are a lot of guys where that's their peak level. But to see a guy like FAA, who was within the top 10, for him to fall back down this far with some injuries, but nothing that held him out for massive amounts of time. So it wasn't the injuries that dropped his ranking. It was just his inability to really perform.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, this is easily the toughest fall from grace injury-wise. I know it wasn't like injuries that kept him out per se, but who knows? Maybe when you have an injury and then you come back, it's kind of something you start to nurse or baby, like you play tight. Maybe you don't want to risk getting hurt again. Like, I don't know what it could be, because he, like you said, number 6, that's pretty crazy to fall that far. And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we're going to see a resurgence from FA, whether it's next year, whether it's in 5 years. He's still a young guy. He still showed us his potential, and I think we'll see it. I don't know whether it's going to be new coach, new swing, whatever it is. I think that we have not seen the end of FAA. What are your thoughts?
I think the issue is that there's always these new young guys coming up, and I think it's much harder to get back to the top than it is to get there and stay there. Because I think when you're at the top, you have access to the best coaches, the best facilities. Mm-hmm. You're making more money. It's just easier, I think, to stay up there. So maybe we'll see it. I can't count it out. I can't see the future, obviously, but I think it's less likely than seeing some younger guys just popping up into the top 10.
Yeah, this is tough.
But speaking of actual, like, severe injuries, there are some guys from the year-end rankings in 2022 that have really fallen off. Guys like Carreno Busta, who was number 13 at the time, Berrettini, who was number 16, Shapovalov, who was number 18, and Kyrgios, who actually is coming back, I think, soon, but he was number 22 at the time. And these guys all really struggled with injuries that actually kept them out for a significant amount of time. So they kind of, that's why I kind of grouped them all together, is because they had to deal with these extended periods of absence that obviously are going to have a massive detriment on your ranking. And that's kind of one of the harsh realities of tennis, is that if you don't play because of any reason, whether it's an injury or not, it's not really as protected as other sports. I think there's a level where you do get easier entry into tournaments. Like maybe you get a wild card if you've had a really high ranking, but you don't get that protection that you maybe have in a team sport like soccer or football, where you have kind of guarantees if you get an injury. In tennis, it's just, if you're injured, it's your responsibility to deal with that. And it's tough for these guys, because all of these guys were really threats in tournaments at this point. I mean, two had made Grand Slam finals with Berrettini and Kyrgios, and Carreno Busta had actually won the Canada Masters that year.
Out of all these guys, I think Berrettini has the best shot of like coming back to, I think, better than number 16, too, to be quite honest. I think he has the ability to be back in the top 10.
Yeah, I'd say Kyrgios, because I think Kyrgios is a guy that has so much talent. It's just whether or not when he returns, he's going to be serious. But I mean, I listened to him on a podcast recently, and he actually said that one part of his tennis career was coaches pulling him out of bars and stuff to go train or to go even to a match. And he wouldn't trade that for a Grand Slam title. That's one of those things where you're like, that's probably why you're not going to see that success, is because you're making the decision to enjoy it. And there's nothing wrong with enjoying the spoils of being a great tennis player. But when he returns, is he going to take it as seriously as he could? We'll see. But I think he, of these guys, has the most talent and could return to the highest level if he's serious about it.
Yeah, it's also really tough for him. And I think I can put Shapovalov in this category too, where you kind of have so much success at such a young age that there's an immense amount of pressure on you. And like, people start expecting a lot. And then when you don't live up to that, and then there's an injury on top of everything, I feel like the motivation just isn't there anymore. You know, you kind of are viewed not as a disappointment, but people just kind of, they don't really have the same hype for you that they did before. And you can kind of feel like loved one minute and then almost hated the next. And I think that kind of like helps deteriorate the player. Like, I think Shapovalov, great example. I felt like after his win over Nadal, he was riding high. He was like kind of just the next big thing in tennis. Everyone loved to talk about him. And then when he didn't really live up to it, he was just chopped liver. And Kyrgios too. Kyrgios has beaten all big three, right?
Yeah, at a young age too.
At a young age, exactly. So it's tough to see these talented players peak at young ages and then not necessarily live up to their hype.
Yeah, and I think a tough thing for Kyrgios too is, like he was talking about it in this interview, was that whenever he does something, it's news because he's that big of a player. So he's coming back and it's kind of like news. When Carreno Busta went out, nobody really had a massive amount of chatter about it. It wasn't a big media thing. But like the fact that Kyrgios is coming back because he's a bigger personality all of a sudden is a big deal. So that puts so much more pressure on him to have success immediately when he comes back, which I think can't be a great thing when you're coming back from a long injury hiatus.
No, I know. Especially with all the stuff he's gone through too. I don't know how much detail he went into the podcast you listened to, but I've heard him say some shit.
Yeah. But then moving on to the last category of guys that have kind of fallen out of the top 25 is Nadal, who was number 2 at the time, had a great 2022. Cilic was number 17 and Bautista Agut was number 21. And these guys are just kind of aging stars. Like, these are guys that are just well past their peak and are kind of also struggling with injuries. So they've all fallen back pretty significantly. I mean, Nadal, I think, is the toughest one because from 2022, the end of 2022, you look at how great that year was. He won 2 Grand Slams that year. And then all of a sudden, only a little over a year later, he's maybe never going to even play again. Crazy to see how fast that fall down can happen.
I know. And he kind of waited a while, or not a while, but like a last second pullout of Monte Carlo. Like, kind of last week, everyone was on the edge of their seats. Like, well, he hasn't pulled out yet. Are we going to see him? And then he, boom, he's out, which was kind of expected. So,
yeah, I think he's seriously just being like, hey, I want to play in these tournaments. So I'm going to give it as long as possible before I decide not to play, because I think he really does want to play.
Yeah.
But yeah, so tough for those guys that are kind of past their prime, and it's just a tough situation for them. But the last group I kind of want to talk about are the guys that have been consistently very solid over the last year plus, kind of stay just in the top 25 in the same sort of area. There are some guys that have risen slightly in the top 25, and then there are some guys that have fallen slightly, so I'm going to kind of separate them that way. But starting things off, I mean, we have Djokovic, Medvedev, and Zverev. These guys were all really great in 2022. I mean, Zverev really stands out because he did have that significant injury in the French Open. But the crazy part is that he was able to go from there being injured and then recover and go all the way back into being in the top 5 right now after suffering that injury. So he stands out a little bit. But I mean, Djokovic and Medvedev, the fact that these guys have been at the top and have not really fallen from there, I think is really impressive.
I know. I feel like you can draw some parallels with these three players, their style. You know, they're very consistent. They don't make many errors. It's like, you know, Medvedev may not be the most entertaining player to watch because he just sticks to the fundamentals. And I think that's kind of why these players are where they are. They're just show up day after day and just kind of get their stuff done. There's no flash to it. There's no, you know, no need to go for crazy points. You know, we have players like Alcaraz who, you know, it's just part of his playing style to put on a show for fans. Whereas I feel like these guys, they're not necessarily looking to put on a show. They're just trying to get the job done, you know, in any way possible.
100%. I mean, like, you look at his Zverev match and you're like, okay, this guy's going to serve pretty well. And then like, probably out consistency his opponent if it gets into a rally, but he doesn't really tend to do the spectacular.
So do you think that's what it takes right now?
What, to be one of the best players in the world?
To be one of the best players, yeah. Like, do you think?
Look at Sinner's game right now. What is Sinner doing? He's serving really well, and then if he gets into a rally, he just doesn't miss. I mean, not to say Sinner doesn't pull out spectacular shots every once in a while, because he does, but if he gets into a rally with a person, that person has to do something special to beat him in that rally.
Yeah, it's just simply not trying to do too much. You know, don't force shots. And none of these players really do that.
Their like baseline ability is just so strong that they can out-rally other professional players. Like, it's not that they're playing a soft game. It's really tough to even stay in a rally with these guys. And that's why they're able to do what they do and play based on fundamental sort of baseline shots.
Yeah, exactly. So with you, when you play, what is more satisfying to you? Is it, you know, kind of crafting a short point, coming up and finishing at the net with a nice winner volley? Or is it outlasting someone in a long rally where you guys are going back and forth, and then they may hit one long or wide and you're like, yeah, Like you kind of get that same satisfaction, I feel like.
I think it depends on how the rally goes a little bit, because there's nothing better than when you really set up a point well. You hit it deep cross court, and then they give you a short ball, and you step into it and really drag it off the court, and then you put it away with a volley. Nothing's better than that. That you just feel so confident in your game after a point like that. There's nothing better than that feeling.
Definitely. I feel like recently I've been appreciating defensive points more. Like when I'm solid on D and I'm running back and forth side to side, you know, hitting little like dinks back, and I'm just basically staying alive and I'm forcing my opponent to make the air. Like once that happens, I love getting a nice little stare down with like not a full fist pump, but one that you just kind of put up like this and you're like, I just outlasted you. Like you can't get this by me. That is now bringing me satisfaction that I didn't have before. It didn't make me appreciate good defense.
I think to an extent it's a different feeling maybe.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, moving on to another guy that's risen slightly in the top 10 is Runa. So, back in 2022 he was just outside the top 10, but despite some coaching sort of difficulties and that whole coaching carousel he's been in, he's been able to move into the top 10. And obviously made the year-end finals last year. So he's taken a step up. I mean, we don't know how his consistency is going to look right now, but I'll be interested to see what he does, especially this tournament. Obviously made the final last year. He's a guy that has risen in level and has shown that he has the potential to be a threat to the top five.
Yeah, the Great Dane. I thought it was pretty funny. I said the only thing that's consistent in his game is the coaching changes.
Yeah.
But no, this is a perfect example. Someone who has the talent and ability to be like one of those players that we mentioned, like Medvedev, Zverev, Djokovic. He's just not consistent enough. Like he'll go for shots that he doesn't really need to. He'll try to force points, try to win them too early. But if he could just kind of relax and play his game, I think we'll see him in that Djokovic, Medvedev, Zverev level.
Solid. Yeah. And then the last guy that has risen slightly is Rublev. His ranking has gone up since 2022. I think he had a very solid last year, obviously. I mean, he made the quarterfinals at I think every Grand Slam. But right now, a little unsure about his level going into clay. He won this tournament last year, but moving on to guys that have fallen slightly. First up, the guys that really fit this category, I think, the most are Ruud and Tsitsipas. These guys went from really like solidly in the top five, like they were 3 and 4 at the year end of 2022. And actually, I think if Ruud had won the US Open in 2022, he would have been the number one player in the world at that point. Like, I think that final was not only obviously for the first Grand Slam for both of those guys, him and Alcaraz, but it was for the number one ranking, which obviously is a big deal. But since then they've kind of fallen back down. I mean, I think it's just their consistency hasn't been the same level it was. In 2022 they were really massive threats at every single tournament. Now it's like you'll see them making deep runs, but you're not really seeing them in as many finals, I feel like. I mean, they're still doing well in some tournaments, but it's not like they were back then.
Yeah, I agreed. Like, for example, this past week in Estoril, this was a tournament that Ruud won last year and he couldn't defend his title. He lo loses in the semis. So, kind of disappointing, but pretty funny that both of these players have had a few chances at a Grand Slam too that just couldn't get it done. But right now, I think what's going on is kind of a snowball effect because I feel like once you start losing, it just kind of builds and builds and builds. And what these players need is kind of a catalyst, something that, whether it's a ATP 250, just something, a win to get under their belt that they can kind of build off of, get some confidence, and kind of get back to their old ways. Because this is not the players that we've seen in 2022. Totally different, in my opinion. Like we had guys that were making Grand Slam finals. Now we have, you know, Ruud, who can't even defend his 250 title in Estoril this past week.
Yeah, I do think it's tough though, because you look at a guy like Tsitsipas, because he won a title last year, right? Was it Los Cabos that he won? But it's like he's lost his edge a little bit. Like he can still beat guys that he's expected to, but like you would expect him to maybe be a contender for the title, and he just isn't.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder if it's players kind of figuring out his playing style. Like, I feel like Rude is someone that I think he just needs to make better adjustments. Like, he still stands 6 feet behind the baseline. I don't know. Maybe I'm not a coach or anything, but I feel like, you know, if it's not working, don't keep doing it.
Yeah.
Like, something that used to work, it just isn't anymore. You know, get to the drawing board, find out where you can make the adjustments and try to implement them, even if you have kind of a like growing pains.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's just, I think, a tough situation for them. It'd be nice to see them kind of get some success, but I don't know what they have to change.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last guy I want to talk about here is Tiafo. So he went from number 19 to currently being number 23. So it's not that big of a fall, but to me, it's not great momentum for him. Because I feel like in 2022, he was kind of still swinging up in his career, and he was making the US Open semifinal, and he was all on the up. And now it kind of seems like he's on the downswing. He wasn't able to defend his title this week in Houston, and it seems like he's just kind of slowly regressing back down a little bit. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. It kind of goes like a wave, like someone reaches their peak and then they regress back to their sort of mean level. And I think he's currently in the regression, and we'll see where he ends up. It looks like it's going to be kind of similar to where FAA is, around 30 to 35.
Yeah, this was a bummer that he couldn't defend his title, because this was actually the tournament that when he won put him at number 10, like in the top 10, which something that, you know, huge accomplishment and kind of sad. In his speech, his runner-up speech, he was kind of basically saying, he's like, yeah, you know, we had a tough year. This would have been nice to get a win, but year's not over. Like, hopefully we get some more. And it was just kind of heartbreaking to hear him, because, you know, to go from 10 to 19 to 23 is just, you know, when we thought, okay, when he hits the cusp, like the top 10, he's going to break out. He's going to start doing even better, but that just wasn't the case.
Yeah.
You think we see him back in the top 10?
I don't see how he would get back in the top 10 with how his game looks right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so those were kind of the biggest ones for all those categories that I wanted to mention. And hopefully it gives you guys, the listeners, an idea of our thoughts on changes in top 25 over the last 15 months or so, and gives you a little bit of background about where people are, who's on the up, who's on the down in the top 25. But anyway, you ready to hop into segments?
Let's do it. All right, what's new in tennis? So you kind of alluded to this earlier in the episode, just as far as like Kyrgios being someone that you always hear about. And my news of the week is, so Kyrgios actually, he weighed in on a controversial call in Estoril this past week. There was an article that grabbed my attention. It was called "Nick Kyrgios Demands Tennis Umpire Is Fired After Huge Controversy at Estoril Open." So a little background on what happened here. It was in the Borges-Garin match, and Garin hit a deep shot and a spectator had yelled out midpoint, but Borges still played the point and Garin ripped one back way wide, like at least by a few feet. And he said that he thought the umpire made the call. He kind of made a big scene. And then what happened next was just dumbfounding. The umpire actually rewarded Garin the point. Instead of replaying it or even standing firm and giving Borges the point. So obviously Borges is like, okay, what is going on here? Come on, this is absurd. But, you know, this happened. And it was a crucial point too, because it was break point. Borges had a break point, and this would have won him the game and put him up a break. And then he went on to lose the match in a tiebreaker in that set. So obviously huge blunder on the umpire's fault. So we have Kyrgios going on X, formerly Twitter, to say that this umpire, formerly known as Twitter, he should be fired. He should never be allowed to ref again. He should be entitled to financial penalties, etc. He basically let them have it. And this is kind of my own take on it. I think this is partially on Garin too, for not saying anything. Like, I feel like this is just a not classy move, because you have other players, we see it all the time. They'll let players replay a point or like speak up for it. And instead of saying, hey, like I'll replay the point, like you don't need to reward me the point. I didn't earn the point. I just ripped it wide. Anyway, I kind of went on a rant there, but I just think it's funny that Kyrgios is still in the news despite not playing any matches on tour.
Yeah, I mean, you know what they say. If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
If you don't cheat, you get beat.
I don't think you can really blame Garin. Like, yeah, it isn't the classiest move, but you can't blame him if the umpire makes a bad call.
I didn't blame him completely. Let's make this out there. I'm blaming the umpire. I'm just saying little bit on Garin for not saying anything.
In my opinion, I disagree. I think there's no blame on Garin because it's not his call to make. But I do think that this is completely insane that that's how that ended up. I saw about this. I didn't realize that the umpire had actually given Garin the point because that's impossible. Like, there was no way that he won that point. It's just, that's insane. It's not like Borges missed the shot after it got called out. That's just crazy to me.
It's insane. But what do you think about refs? Because players get fined all the time. What do you think about refs getting fined?
No, I think he should get fired. I think I think Kyrgios is right. That's because that's not even like a bad call. That's like a corrupt call. It seems you have a supervisor come out, do something. Like, don't do that.
Yeah, and of course it had to happen on the crucial point too.
Yeah. That's pretty wild.
What did you see this week?
What I saw this week, like I said earlier, is Berrettini winning the title in Marrakesh. I wanted to highlight this because it's only his second tour level event of the season after he returned from injury and only his third event overall since the US Open. So he played in a challenger, which he made the final of but didn't win. And then he played in Miami and lost to Murray in the first round. Then plays in this tournament, gets his first tour level win of the year, and wins the whole tournament. So that's a pretty massive accomplishment. And with this win, he moved up 51 spots from 135 to 84 now. So that's a pretty massive jump, obviously. And I think it's just overall a great positive situation for him. Positive momentum now coming back from the injury.
Yeah, I feel like an absolute clown for taking Shevchenko against him in my bet of the week last week. Remember, I was like, Berrettini's coming back from injuries, hasn't had great year so far, and then he smacks Shevchenko 6-2, 6-1, whatever the score. It was a lot to a little, and I think he's back. I was excited. I love Berrettini.
One interesting thing about this week is we saw a bunch of big servers finding success in clay. Like I said that earlier with Hurkacz, but Hurkacz won the tournament in Estoril. Berrettini wins it in Marrakesh. Shelton wins it in Houston. And in the final in Houston was Tiafoe, who's another big server. All of a sudden, we have all these big servers on clay. Is there just a new strategy developing? Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. This is going to be interesting. Plot twist.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk a little bit about that concept in my match of the week. But before that, let's hop into bet of the week.
Yeah, let's get in some degenerate gambling here.
Yeah.
Nah, this week I'm not going super degen. I'm taking a nice conservative Jerry minus 165 over Echeverry.
You know, it's funny because I think I consistently have Murray as my match of the week, but it seems you consistently have Jari as your bet of the week.
Dude, I know. That's funny. Yeah, I mean, he's won three titles on clay. So clay is his surface. He's South American. I think it is going to be a tough one just because Echeverry is also good on clay. He's an Argentinian player. But I'm simply just going with the fact that Jari is the better player here. And I think he's becoming more of a well-rounded player too. Like, he's not just a serve and volleyer. His baseline hitting is actually very much improved. So I feel like his ability to still throw in the serve and volley and have that in his arsenal will be beneficiary because he can just throw it out whenever. It's not like he's going to be doing it every time. So I feel like he's going to bring more of an element of surprise to this match, which I think will ultimately get him the dub. I think he gets it done.
Yeah, I think it's a close one. And I think that's reflected in the odds. But if I was going to make a pick, yeah, I think I'd go with Jari here.
All right, who are you taking?
I'm going with Hurkacz versus Draper
And I'm going with a little bit of a prop bet here, over 2.5 sets plus 120. And I'm going with that first off because I don't think Draper's a walkover opponent. Like, he's a good player. He made a pretty solid run at the US Open last year. But also because 9 of Hubie's last 13 matches have gone to 3 sets. So the majority of the time, it seems like he does go 3 sets. And I think it's because, obviously, he's very strong on his serve, but he's not quite as good of a return player. So he gets a lot of long sets, a lot of tie breaks. And when you're in a tie break, it can really go either way. So I think this is a solid bet just because it has the evidence to support it.
I love this bet. I think I'm going to take it too. And if there's also a line over on games too, I want that as well. Because Hurkacz, I know 9 of 13 for 3 sets, but I want to see how many have gone at least one set go to a tiebreaker. Because I feel like he's also pretty consistent with that too. And then Draper, another big server. Like, come on. All right, slam the over on sets and games. Let's go.
Sounds good. All righty, what about match of the week?
Oh, match of the week. I feel like it was kind of a slow week, but I still found a match that was pretty entertaining to me. Kovacevic, he's the young American. He wins a thriller against Kokkinakis, 7-6, 6-7, 6-4. It was a type 3 setter. And I just have fun watching Kova because he plays really fast and aggressive, like really embodies that American playing style, you know? And he also has a one-handed backhand, which you don't really see too much on tour anymore. And he slaps it. Kokkinakis, I thought he was a lot better than he is. Like, he, you know, the name's well known. He's a respectable player. He won a doubles slam with Kyrgios in Australia, but he's ranked outside the top 100 and Kova's 96. So I thought Kokkinakis would be the favorite, but turns out he wasn't. And yeah, it's kind of just my match of the week. Pretty basic match of the week.
Yeah, I mean, Kokkinakis, to be honest, is a lot like Kyrgios in that he really showed crazy potential at a very young age. Like, I think he also maybe beat the big three, or he at least beat Federer. He may be in Miami, but he showed obviously massive potential at a really young age and then hasn't really, like you said, performed on it. He shows up every once in a while with a big match or a big win, but doesn't really consistently show a super high level in these tournaments.
Yeah, he's also super volatile too. Like, he'll whip forehands and then he'll also like miss hit balls into the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably why he's able to beat some guys crazy sometimes when he's just on, and then other days he's not playing as well and it just doesn't go well for him.
I know. So what was your match of the week?
I went with the final in Houston where Shelton beat Tiafoe 7-5, 4-6, 6-3. And it was interesting to see what seemed to be like a very American style of playing on clay, which was almost the opposite of what you kind of usually see being the dominant strategy, where you see guys like Nadal or Ruud, big spinners playing deep behind the baseline, playing kind of longer points. Tiafoe and Shelton both kind of played pretty tight on the baseline and hit very flat shots, came to the net as much as possible, mm-hmm. and really were trying to make it so that it almost wasn't like it was clay. And I just thought that was kind of funny to watch just them play it like it was almost a hard court. But obviously they're both in the finals, so they were successful on it and using that strategy. But in the end, Shelton won the match because in the third set, there was a really long and tough hold he had where game went to deuce. He ended up winning it. And then they had the changeover. He jumped all over Tiafoe on Tiafoe's serve, got the break, and then kind of carried it through to win the match. So I think it was just interesting to see that different strategy employed for clay.
Yeah, I thought that was a good observation. It definitely was an aggressive match. And I felt like, so Shelton had a lot of success in the first set coming to the net. And then we saw Tiafoe in the second set change his strategy to also do that, where he found success and won that set too. So yeah, pretty fun to see.
Yeah, Americans do not want to see the ball bounce. They're like, the clay is just not what we're here for. We don't want it to be slow.
I know, bad day to be in. I was going to say bad day to be an American on clay, but quite good day.
Both of them in the final.
Let's see if that translates over to Europe.
Yeah, maybe a different game over there.
Yeah. All right, and that's the show. If you're not already subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube at Painting Lines Podcast. Feel free to shoot us a DM or email us any questions or thoughts at paintinglinespodcast@gmail.com.